they're a very dangerous weapon, and it could mean big escalation. It could mean a lot of bad things can happen. Tomahawks are a big deal. But one thing I have to say, we want Tomahawks also. We don't want to be giving away things that we need.
That was President Trump in the Oval Office just minutes before this broadcast, where he was answering one of the questions from a reporter about the Tomahawk missiles. Now, we've been talking about this for quite a while. We've been have several shows talking about the various possibilities. And then now here, President Trump, with Zelensky sitting right opposite him, right in front of him, probably underneath that camera angle that we saw there, listening to a lot of this, got to be wondering, what in the world is going on here? As a quick recap, you may remember that Trump, whatever it was, about 2 or 3 weeks ago, put out a Truth Social that says, you know what, after I've analyzed all this situation, I've discovered or decided that Ukraine can actually win all of the war. They can go back to the 1991 borders and, who knows, maybe even go further into Russian territory. That's what I'm thinking. And so Zelensky, of course, was loving that. And now he said after that, we're going to give you some ammunition and some weapons and some all kinds of military support, maybe up to $1 billion per month that we would sell to NATO to give to you. So we wouldn't actually give you anything, but we would provide it. And so now he's like, cool, that's great. You know what would even be cooler, though? How's about some Tomahawk long-range cruise missiles? That would even be sweller from my perspective, said Zelensky. And then you may recall Trump said, yeah, I may do it. That's right. If President Putin does not do what I tell him to do and agree to end this war, yeah, I might do it. I might give those Tomahawks. That'll get his attention, right? So that's what he said before. That's what Trump said just days ago. And then there was this plan for Zelensky to come to town. And I think it was on our show just yesterday. We mentioned that Zelensky came a day early. He was meeting with, and we showed you that looked like it was a movie trailer video they made because they're so pumped about talking to all of these defense contractors and energy companies, et cetera, because they're already thinking, how are we going to get this? We're going to get more air defense missiles. We're going to get more long-range missiles. And who knows, maybe the Tomahawks. That's what they were expecting. And then before the meeting happens yesterday, out of nowhere, while we were on the air, actually, Gary showed me this Truth Social where Trump said, I'm on the phone right now with Putin. Turns out that this was the eighth phone call that they've had, Putin and Trump, since this war began. Since he's been inaugurated in January. So that's quite a lot. And it was the longest one that they've had to date. It said that it was 2.5 hours, according to the readouts. So the Russian side was really talking this up. So that's a lot of stuff to be talking about. After that visit, then Trump ends up coming out and saying, yeah, we're going to meet at the Secretary of State, Foreign Minister level. So Rubio and Foreign Minister Lavrov are going to get together possibly as early as next week. And then after that, I'm going to meet with Putin in person, possibly in Budapest, Hungary. And I think we're going to bring this war to an end. Not a word, anything about the Tomahawk missiles. And some people asked him yesterday if that was discussed. You see how it came up, and he laughed. Ha ha! I made some joke about it, but turns out that he didn't say anything seriously, and there was no discussion in the aftermath. On the Russian readout, by the way, that I looked at earlier today, what the Russians said after their phone call was that the Russians said, "Yeah, the issue was brought up, and we told them, listen, we want a negotiated settlement. This is what President Putin has been saying forever." When you hear these comments from, by the way, many in Europe who say, we're trying to put up the pressure, we're turn the screws on Russia so that it compel them to come back to the table. You keep hearing that phrase, come back to the table. Russia never left the table. They've been there in Istanbul in 2022. They were willing in 2023. Putin again in the summer of 2024, June 14th to be specific, laid out again a diplomatic opportunity. And he has done nothing ever since Trump came into office about saying we're willing to have another one. He's at the table today. He said in Beijing, he repeated, we want this solved diplomatically, but we're either going to accomplish our goals at the negotiating table or on the battlefield. So they've never said anything different. And the Russian readout of that yesterday said that they reiterated that they want a diplomatic outcome. So they continued, even though Trump has said a lot of fiery rhetorical things here in the last couple of months, especially after the failure at Alaska to produce anything, that the Russians have continued to still remain polite and non-aggressive. They don't return tit for tat when it comes to stuff with Trump. They keep saying, we're willing to negotiate with him. We don't want things to go in a bad direction because they can, but we would far prefer here. So that was repeated yesterday by the Russian side on the issue of the Tomahawk missiles. President Putin is reported to have said that if you use those, it won't have any difference. It won't make a difference on the war. It will hurt. It will have some pain, but it will not change any fundamentals on the ground. But it will cause severe damage between the interests of the United States and Russia going forward. And he did, at least in the readout, they didn't specify what that meant. In terms of what President Trump has said of this 2.5 hour call, that they, one of the things they talked about was, aside from the resolving the Russia-Ukraine war, was things afterward. They talked about the redoing the START, the new START treaty that's going to expire in February. They talked about wanting to do business. Trump talked a lot about that, actually, here in the last 12 or so hours. Do we want to have business with Russia? So there's lots of things to do. As I've said every time since Trump's been in office, the Russians keep saying, we're looking beyond the war. We want to get this deal over with because we understand that you're going to live, you're going to exist afterwards, and we're going to exist afterwards, however it's resolved. And so we're going to have to learn how to get along. Much better to do this intentionally and come to some kind of agreement that can be a win-win for the two sides and can lower the temperatures and lower the possibility of any kind of a clash, God forbid, a nuclear war. So that seems pretty reasonable and pretty allowable. That's what we should all be going after for that very reason, because the cost to humanity would be potentially irrecoverable and everybody would lose. That's given, but it could be catastrophic if it goes down that path. So now then we're left with, let's get back to the story here where Volodymyr Zelensky is now sitting back in the room. He had to be thinking when he came to Washington and that video that Gary just showed you again a minute ago, they had to be all thumbs up and excited about this. And I think that at the meeting that he was supposed to have today, because just remember, this was scheduled before the Putin conversation, the phone call came up. He had every reason to think that there was a good chance that he was going to get approval to use Tomahawk cruise missiles, because that's what he's been begging for. That's what Trump had been signaling that maybe he was going to give, et cetera. So he was, I think, very hopeful he could get that. And then it's like the rug gets pulled out from under him completely. And now all of a sudden, Trump is saying what you just said there. Well, that wasn't all. Trump had more to say on the Tomahawk cruise missiles.
What's going to happen if the United States is in a conflict and we need the Tomahawks?
That's a problem. We need Tomahawks and we need a lot of other things that we've been sending over the last 4 years to Ukraine. We gave them a lot. Now we have a different situation. We send it to the European Union. They pay for it and all that, and they have plenty of money. But it's beyond the money. You know, we need Tomahawks, and we need a lot of other weapons that we're sending to Ukraine. One of the reasons we want to get this war over is exactly that. It's not easy for us to give. You're talking about massive numbers of very powerful weapons. So that's one of the things we'll be talking about.
So, of course, that's correct. Of course, that's right. We know we're going to need them. But then the question you have to ask is, then why did you offer them? Why did you even put that on the table to be discussed if you knew we weren't going to use any? Now, for those who may be tempted, and I've already seen some on the West, and especially the U.S., beat their breasts and say, yeah, the threat of that is what brought Putin to the table. Okay, you got to look at what the Russians actually said. They didn't say that we came because you threatened to use Tomahawk cruise missiles. They were already saying, even before the phone call, it's not going to make any difference on the battlefield. That readout's the same thing that the Russians have already said in public, that all that's going to do is just exacerbate the situation. Some of them are going to get through. It could hurt. Most of them are probably going to get shot down because these are like 30 and 40-year-old technology missiles, and guarantee you, of the limited stockpiles we have, no one was even contemplating giving them the good stuff. We would only give them the older stuff that we would not need. We were never going to start at the best stuff. I guarantee that, which means most of the stuff was going to get shot down anyway. So it probably wouldn't have gotten a lot through. It's not going to change the difference. I could have told you that it's not going to change the outcome of the war. And I did for very specific reasons. Go back and watch some of our previous episodes. But the bottom line is it was never going to make any difference. So then why would you offer it? And then now then that you have this now a meeting set up, Or is it suddenly off the table? And now then you're telling us, well, we can't get rid of these. We got to take care of our own stockpiles. And then he mentioned that several other categories too, which we've already been doing. We've already been telling you there's a real problem. It doesn't matter in large measure, strategically, it doesn't matter who's paying for it. If it's NATO paying for it, or if it's us just giving it away, what matters is that you're dwindling down your stockpiles because there is the need is greater than what we can produce. We still, it's going to take us about 5 years of really focused effort once the war is over to replace our stockpiles back to where they either were or they need to be in the future. And it probably need to go beyond that in many categories. Now that we have a better picture of what modern warfare is like, well, that's not anything you could have just figured out this week, man. That's something that should have been crystal clear the day that you came into office. And so that should have driven you our needs, which he articulated there. That should have been driving the actions from the first month in office. We should have been taking the actions that Colonel Doug McGregor has said many times on this show, that we have repeated many times in our own view here. This war is unwinnable, so we are not going to invest another dollar or one more rocket or one more missile or artillery shell or tank for something that cannot succeed. It's immoral, it's illogical, and we're not going to do it anymore. That's what we should have done right away, because everything he said in that clip was already true on the day he came into office. And that should have informed our position. But now then, how much stuff have we gotten rid of in between now and then? And that doesn't even talk about the Israeli-Hamas war and all the things we give them for that, or our own striking into the Houthis in the Red Sea, or our own striking into Iran, etc. All of those things keep dwindling the stockpile. Our industrial capacity cannot replace it at its scale for years to come. Let's stop the bleeding now of our own stuff. So one would hope that now Trump is like focused on saying, all right, you know what? Let's just get this off the table here by whatever means we can. That's what I hope this is going to mean. Now, obviously, that's not what Zelensky wants to hear. And what that all these clips I've showed you from today are where the cameras are out there. So as soon as the cameras are finished and they move off, then they're going to move into the real discussions where the conversations are going to be harder and where they're going to get down to hopefully the brass tacks. So I hope that brass tacks equals some version of what I just said here, that we're not going to keep going down this path anymore. That's what I hope happens. But one of the other questions that people ask, and I think it's a reasonable one, was, are you getting played by President Putin?
Aren't you concerned that maybe the Russian president is trying to buy himself more time?
Yeah, I am. But, you know, I've been played all my life by the best of them. And I came out really well. So it's possible, yeah, a little time.
Is your gut instinct?
It's all right. But I think that I'm pretty good at this stuff. I think that he wants to make a deal.
He wants to make a deal. So I think he's pretty good at that, he says. And I just thought it was really odd there that he says, oh, yeah, I've been played all my life. Maybe he just misspoke, but I don't think it's the way you want to characterize it. Maybe you can say many people have tried, but no, he said, I've been played many times. So that's not a real encouraging thing and certainly not a best way to put that, but it may be accurate. And but listen, on this deal, I don't think that Putin's playing him. So I think that the implication there that he got played by Putin, I think is wrong. I think that Putin has been very consistent and very clear where he's trying to go, what his outcome is, what his intention is, which is to get this war off the table as soon as possible and get onto the business of recreating the continental-wide security architecture where everybody gets to have safety, where his country is safe, his flank security is safe from any further NATO. And he's actually interested in security for everybody, because Putin, unlike Europe, recognizes that if his adversaries don't have peace, then he's going to continue to have the potential friction for conflict on his border. He doesn't want that. So you can say, oh, he doesn't mean that he actually wants peace with Europe. Of course he can. And it's rational and logical. Even if you hate Vladimir Putin, it's rational and logical for him to want to have peace with his adversaries. Because as long as nobody in Western Europe feels like they're going to get, you know, Hitlered, and there's going to be the Wehrmacht come rolling west across, as long if they don't believe that, then they're not going to be interested in what they are doing right now, which is plotting how to go to war against Russia. That's what is happening right now. He wants to solve that problem. So Russia has incentive to bring this war to an end and to end the process of friction elsewhere, to include Europe. All these claims that the Europeans keep making over and over about, oh, he's going to take all of Ukraine and then he's coming for us next. I mean, you're probably sick of hearing me say that as much as you are of them saying it. I certainly am. And Russia, I think, is going to prove that they have actually been telling the truth the whole time, that they had no interest in going. They don't even have any interest in, I would wager, in going beyond the Dnieper River. I think they will do it if they're forced into it, i.e. if they can't get a peace agreement and there still stays all kinds of friction on the border there, then I think they'll keep going, but they don't want to. If they can stop here, I think Putin means it. He'll still have a negotiated settlement, as he said in that readout, right now, as long as he can be assured that there's not going to be any threat from him on the other side. He has no reason to do it. Let's don't provide one that gives him motivation to actually go on, you know, continue to be militaristic and make us all feel like that there could be a World War III breakout. If there's a World War III breaks out, it is the most profound failure of statehood, statecraft that in a human history, because the stakes would be much bigger than anything that happened in even in World War II. And in a war that does not need to be fought, it shouldn't be fought. There is no existential risk and threat be coming from the Russian side here. There simply isn't, except for the one that we're making, because we refuse adamantly in the West to bring this war to an end over this misguided idea that we can't lose and Russia can't win. We just have to make sure that that happens. We want to make sure that it happens, but we don't have the capacity to bring that to fruition. And instead, all we do is keep alive the possibility of expansion. And that's just something that we're going to have to get a better grip on here and recognize the reality, or we're going to find ourselves really in a lot of trouble. Gary, can I ask you to come in for a second? Because I came into a show here and didn't get a chance. You get a chance to cut those other videos? Okay. Let me guess, because I want before we click on to, he said some things about Maduro I want to get to, but there's a couple of other things we're speaking about Europe that I want to get to, that there's some real problems with how the Europeans have been viewing some of this, to include our neighbor to the north, Mr. Carney. So first of all, let's go to the Hungarian foreign minister, who kind of used this same thing. There doesn't need to be war on the continent, and he's opposed to it. Watch this.
Világpolitikát elnézve az ember már-már azt látja, hogy globális politikai rendszer fejre állt. Bizonyos részei, mintha megőrültek volna. Főleg Európában egy háborús pszichózis uralkodott el. Az európai politikában a kioktatás, a leckésztetés vált a kapcsolattartás alapjává. Hogyha valaki a mainstream-mel szemben álló véleményt merészel megfogalmazni, akkor azt azonnal megbélyegzik, megrágalmazzák, minősítgetik. Mi magyarok egy más stílust képviselünk, más hozzáállást, mi a párbeszédben hiszünk, és mi azt gondoljuk, hogy egy kölcsönös tiszteletre alapuló együttműködés hozhat el kölcsönös előnyöket. Mi a béke pártján állunk, és azt gondoljuk, hogy a háborúkra diplomácia, a tárgyalások hozhatják el a megoldást.
So now I specifically used him because, as you heard, that's the location where both Russia and the United States have agreed is probably a good place to have peace. So in Budapest, Hungary. And that's, of course, where Viktor Orban is currently the leader. His foreign minister has said it seems like there's this almost psychosis in the West where they just seem locked in about wanting war instead of peace, but we're for peace. Hence, that's why it's even possible that Vladimir Putin is willing to go to a NATO country to actually talk about bringing this war to a conclusion. And I urgently pray that that's the case. But so far, whether I've showed you recently, Friedrich Merz from Germany, who said, we are no longer in a state of peace with Russia. We're not at war, but we're in a state of peace. Ursula von der Leyen talking about this build up European side. You had Secretary of NATO General Mark Rutte keeps talking over and over about we have to build up our strength and build up our military and expand our capabilities and all this kind of stuff. And then even our own neighbor to the north, Mark Carney, has said, look, we need to be looking, because he's kind of saying, I think war's still an option.
There's winning. There's winning. We can debate how that's defined, but winning militarily on the battlefield, getting to a position where there is a peace accord, a ceasefire, a frozen conflict, some understanding. They can get to that position with the support of Europe, the support of Canada, the support of Australia, the support of a few others, and with the U.S. more in a secondary role.
So, yeah, so they're still looking at how can we continue on to support war? How can we get ready for that? And then in this next clip here in that same interview, he again says something that so many others have recently, that Russia's losing.
There's been direct conversations. There's been opportunities for Putin to take off ramps. Putin has not taken any of those off ramps. The president speaks for himself, but I think his patience is being exhausted. His line is hardening. The likelihood of further economic sanctions against Russia is increasing, and the severity of those next phase of sanctions could be a different order of magnitude than previous rounds of sanctions. All of that is pointing in one direction, and I would underscore Russia has been moving at literally a snail's pace in terms of acquisition of territory, temporary acquisition of territory in Ukraine over the course of the last 3 years. And they're not going to win. They're not going to win this war.
They're not going to win this war. I mean, this just is troubling. I just got to call it. Carney seems like a good guy. I think he's a sincere guy. I don't have anything negative to say about him as a human being, but holy cow. How can you be the leader of a country in NATO and believe what you're saying there? And I think he does. You know, he's saying that Russia has avoided every off-ramp there's ever been. That's what we have done. I mean, is he serious? I don't know if he's lying there or if he is badly deluded, but it has been the West that has adamantly refused every off-ramp all the way back to 2014. When we had a situation in place that was negotiated by Ukraine, by Russians, and by Europeans, that in the Maidan situation, a actual democratic solution was found, that new elections would be held because the people were so upset. They would be held in May of that year. This was on, I want to say, the 20th of February, 2014. And the next day, the opposition in Ukraine would not have that deal that was done. And so they ran the guy out of town, Yanukovych. And then basically that completed the coup. And then they installed who we actually wanted through some of our diplomatic corps, that we turned them in. And we just said, yeah, no, we're going to go in this different direction here. Doesn't matter who the people voted for. It doesn't matter. It was a legal election. This is the outcome that we want. And then there was the Minsk Accords and Istanbul and all that. You certainly know the rest of it. And in light of all those facts, of all of that historical record that is unequivocal, instead of saying that we rejected every diplomatic off-ramp that was on the table and all the ones since then and the one that's on our face right now, he ascribes that to Russia, who, as I said a minute ago, has been at the negotiating table and remains there even as we speak right now. And then you want to say that they're losing, that they're not succeeding here? I mean, it's like you're listening to Ben Hodges or something, and that's the only thing you listen to, or Jack Keane. And do you ever look over on the other side of the line? Do you ever look on the Ukrainian side of the line and see the extraordinary amount of destruction that's coming? And you say they're moving at a snail's pace, but he makes the same mistake that so many in the West do, that Emmanuel Macron makes, that we've shown you from about a month ago. You're looking at the territory. Russia's not looking at the territory. We've had Colonel Jacques Beau explicitly point out the Russian stated objective is not territorial acquisition per se. That's a secondary objective. The primary one is just destruction of the Ukrainian armed forces. And that is what they're focused on. They want to kill as many Ukrainian soldiers as possible. until one day there simply isn't one. And by definition, then they would have demilitarization. They wouldn't have to worry about anyone agreeing to it. They would just kill them until there's you've exhausted all the manpower that you have, or there's just nothing, not enough left. Why do we want to get to that point? Those are the realities here. And you just we're just not dealing with the realities here. And, you know, somebody else who's not dealing with reality. And that I mentioned in at the start here that when President Trump was making those statements, that Zelensky was sitting right up underneath him. And finally, the camera swung over around to him and they asked him what he thought about this situation.
Putin is not ready. I think not ready. But I think that I'm confident that with your help, we can stop this war. They don't have successful steps on the battlefield, and it's good. I think that their army is weak now. But a lot of losses. They have a lot of losses and in economy and people. Yesterday, I had a good opportunity to meet with the big American energy companies, and they're ready to help. And I had also meetings, thanks to your team. We have meetings with a good military companies. We spoke about air defense, and I want to share it after with details where we are.
Okay, if you know anything about Volodymyr Zelensky, man, that is not his confident version. He has been confident when you've seen him in a lot of these videos that we show that he makes, or when he's especially when he's standing up in front of a lot of these European Union meetings that he's gone to. The one right there you're looking at in some of those videos, he is a very confident person, because I am certain that he came into Washington, D.C., thinking that he was going to get the tomahawk or a really good chance of it. But he thought that he had Putin or Trump on his side and was going to put more pressure onto Russia. He had said in the days leading up to this that it wasn't just the tomahawk he wanted, but he wanted a lot more air defense missiles, and he wanted more economic sanctions. And he praised the British for having some more sanctions. And he said he wanted this 19th round of package coming from the European Union. Praised up Ursula von der Leyen. When he's looking confident, he has a very clear look about him, and there was no confidence on his face then. You could see that's not what he wanted to say. He was saying, well, I don't think Putin's actually ready, because Trump said he's ready. He knows that Putin's not ready. He's not ready to give in to your terms. That is true. Putin is ready for a negotiated settlement, but on his terms. Zelensky is aware of that, so he doesn't want to go down that path. And you could see on his face that he was doing everything he could not to contradict Trump in front of the cameras, because that didn't work out last time that happened in the Oval Office back in February. So he was really struggling, trying to find the right way to balance that out without also agreeing to something he didn't want. So he just said, well, I don't think he's really ready. But anyway, what we're really focused on this, and I met with all these people, and he just repeated that. But you can see him just stumbling around trying to figure out something coherent to say, and just not really having a good success with it. So one can imagine that when the cameras went off and all the press were shoveled out the door, he's probably going to go back to what he was saying. He's probably going to give voice to this, like, you know, what the hell? I mean, we were talking about, well, you giving me tomahawks and air defense missiles, and now then you're not even talking about that anymore. You're saying, no, we got to keep that and other stuff. And I think Putin's ready to have a deal. So from Zelensky's position, he's like, you know, what the hell is going on here? It's like a political earthquake under his feet, and he doesn't know where he's going to land. If Trump is going to do what he should do, he's going to do what we suggested at the top of the show, which is bring this war to an end and say, we're not willing to underwrite anything else that's not going to work. We're not going to keep putting our equipment. We're not going to keep drawing down our assets in ways that could escalate and worsen our relationships with Russia. Things that apparently Trump has finds that are important as well as Putin does, about what comes after the war, about lowering the risk of conflict, about increasing the chances of just peaceful coexistence, even if you don't want to call it peace, but stability in the relationship. That would be a big welcome factor here if we could get to something like that, because that's the foundation. Once you can get some stability, that you can later get to actual peace. That's probably not going to come for a long time, but you're not even going to get on that path if you don't start with something attainable. And that is, let's get stability back into the equation and get escalation off the menu. That's what we should do. We're going to wait and see, because obviously the first of these is going to be the ministerial meetings, I guess sometime next week. And I haven't heard where those are going to take place yet, or the exact date. We'll certainly keep you appraised on that. And then apparently Putin and Trump will meet in Hungary in Budapest once that is conducted. And of course, the hope is that we come up with some kind of a solution. But you got to know that Zelensky is he feels like his head's spinning right now and the ground is shaking underneath him. And while on a human level, I do have some sympathy for him, I've got none for the fact that he is himself, with his own agency and his own authority, is unwilling to do what is right for his country to end the pointless bloodshed. So if he has to be compelled to do that, I'm A-okay with that. Because everybody listening to this video needs to understand, however much you may hate Russia, you may hate Vladimir Putin, that's an individual choice that you can make. But there is no path to avoiding defeat for the Ukraine side. Your options are you can lose ugly now and lose a lot of territory that currently Ukraine forces possess, or you can ignore reality and you will then suffer an ignominious defeat later on at much higher bloodshed of the Ukrainian people that you claim to want to defend, and certainly more territory will go permanently to the Russian side. That's the ugly truth of it. And it doesn't matter how much you like or hate it. That's just the way it is. And we'll see how it's going to be working out. Now, before we let you go today, there was one other topic that was brought up in that.
Hey, Danny, if I could just to interrupt quickly, not breaking news, but I had told Danny when we're on live that the cameras were all set up and microphones were all set up for everybody to talk. Everybody, meaning Zelensky and Trump, to talk about what came out of the meeting. And, you know, it's funny, there was a tell. I thought anybody who's played cards knows what a tell is. There was a tell with both the shots that we played from Trump. He didn't just say once, you know, we need those tomahawks. And then again, we played another shot. Almost didn't cut the shot because he already said that. Well, he said it again. Yeah, we need those tomahawks. Well, they didn't come out and speak after that meeting. So my guess is there was nothing to celebrate. There was nothing to talk about. I bet you.
Oh, so there was supposed to be, but they didn't come back out to speak.
Yeah, so I think Zelensky, you know, put his hands in his pockets. His head was hanging down. And he just slunk back into the limousine and said, sayonara.
Wow, that is really telling. I'm glad you came back and said that. Yeah, that harkens back to the February meeting that blew up, because remember, they were supposed to sign this minerals deal and they had the camera set up and all that, and then it ended up after the meeting not going on. And so
they had a beautiful lunch all laid out. You should have seen the food they had, Danny.
Man, yeah, that is very telling.
Yeah. So I just thought I'd give you a heads up on that.
Yeah, I appreciate that, because we were kind of hoping that might happen and he could go to it live, but now we see that there was none whatsoever. And that can only mean that Zelensky was not happy with whatever happened in that private meeting. We'll be, as soon as we can get some information on that, if there's something else breaks later tonight, we'll even do it. But we'll definitely bring that to you tomorrow, even on the weekend. So we'll definitely keep you up to date on that. But as I said a second ago, there was one other topic that was brought up in this with President Trump, and that is something we've been covering here since it first broke, and that is with all these boats being blown up in the Caribbean Sea and this friction going on between the United States and Maduro. President Trump had some rather choice words to say about it.
Maduro offered everything in his country, all the natural resources. He even recorded a message to you in English recently, offering mediation. What should we do in order to stop that?
He has offered everything. He's offered everything. You're right. You know why? Because he doesn't want to fuck around with the United States.
Wow. A lot of people use rough language sometimes, but there's a place and a time for it, and that is not the place for it. That is not an appropriate way to talk. It's very guttural. And for any of those who say, well, you know, sometimes you got to talk tough, maybe there's places for it, but there's also sometimes where you got to talk appropriate for the level of what you're discussing here. And that was not appropriate. I mean, that sounds more like somebody who's actually mad about something and didn't get their way. This is, I think, we'll wait and see how this continues to play out. But what I think is, and I think I may even mention this earlier on a show today, that my assessment is that this is all these blowing up of these boats and all this apparently sending in the CIA operatives and hit teams inside of Venezuela by the president. He openly mentioned that he was doing something like that, or that he had authorized it, is not to stop drugs. When you look at the map of things and when you look at the routes for a lot of drugs coming into the United States, Colombia is a much bigger issue than Venezuela is. And Mexico is an even bigger issue there in terms of the transit routes and all that kind of stuff. Venezuela plays a small role, but Venezuela has a lot of oil, And because it's been mismanaged for decades now, if you had a modern Western technology organization come in, you could really, really ramp that production up. And so I had long thought that they were looking for, this administration was looking for a way to have a regime change to get him out of the way so that they can control it. And that's not without substance. You may recall in the first Trump administration that a really ham-fisted attempt to forestall a coup there by supporting a guy named Juan Guaido, who said that the presidential election was illegal. It was not true. So actually, I think he was the Speaker of the House at the time. He says, by Constitution, I am actually the president of the country. And he just declared himself that. So, and we supported, there was all these protests, whatever. You may recall, John Bolton was really involved in that time back when he was in the good graces of Trump. And, you know, they just bent over backwards to try to get Maduro out. Utterly failed. It was a humiliation. I mean, it was a ham-fisted. It was badly attempted. And we utterly failed. And Maduro ends up getting more deeply ensconced than ever. Now here we come in again. The other day that there's the award of the Nobel Peace Prize to the next person, the opposition figure who's against Maduro and who openly wants the help of the United States to get rid of him. Again, the same claim. He didn't actually win the presidential election. He's an illegal president that needs to be taken out, and you should support me, et cetera. And of course, now here we start blowing up boats. We keep blaming Venezuela. And here we go authorizing the CIA and potential no hit squads. And in light of all that, Maduro is not stupid. And he says, you know what? I see what this is too. If I can see that this is probably bad oil, he obviously did too. And he says, you know what? How about we have a deal? I'll basically give you rights to all kinds of stuff, to revenue sharing stuff, ability to come in and do all that kind of stuff. Because then that takes all of the facade off. That removes the reason why you would want to go and overthrow it if you can actually get access to those natural resources and that, you know, very valuable oil just through negotiation. But that seemed to make Trump mad. He seemed to be upset by that. Like, no, I want to take it. I don't want to have it given partially to me with him still staying in power. So we'll see where a lot of this goes, but I'll just categorically tell you, there is absolutely nothing justifying us killing 27 people so far, what we've claimed, and I think 6 total strikes on these boats. We are just told to take the government at its word. We don't see any intelligence. We don't see the names of these people. President Trump yesterday from the Oval Office said, oh, we have very deep intelligence. We know every detail, what was on the boats, where they came from, where they were going, all this kind of stuff, but he's not released any of it. That wouldn't even matter, though. Even if he did all of that stuff, it is still illegal according to international law. It is illegal according to the United States law. And if you take action against the government of a foreign power as the head of state, that also violates the United States Constitution, period. Black and white against the Article 1. That power exclusively resides in Congress. They alone can justify an armed attack against another country. We've already violated it once in Iran. And so there's probably would be no problem. And if they did it again, I doubt anybody would say anything. I again heap scorn on the Democratic Party, because instead of standing up for the Constitution or anybody in the Republican Party for that matter, they just say, oh, yeah, that's kind of how it works now. Obama did it. Bush did it. Trump did it in the first one. Biden did it, you know, sometimes. Okay, so everybody's been violating law, so there is no more law on that. That's bad because, as I keep telling you, that can one day lead us getting into a war that we should never fight and might not be able to get out of, and we might even lose one day. So these things are important, and if we want to be a country governed by the rule of law, if we want to try to hold other people accountable and tell them they need to follow the rules-based order, then we have to follow the rules. If you don't follow them yourself, then you have no moral position from which to compel compliance with others. Otherwise, it's purely a matter of force politics. The guy who has the power dictates to the other side, the weaker party, and it's as simple as that. And if you want to go down that path, I don't recommend it, but at least be honest enough about calling it out for what it is. Don't claim to be a democracy. Don't claim to be a defender of the rule-based order when you violate it whenever you want to, in no matter how many people you literally kill in the process. So we'll wait and see how this one goes too, but it looks like Maduro may have, you know, cut the rug out from under President Trump by offering to give him the very thing that they're trying to get. And you saw what kind of reaction that had. But we'll keep following all these things like we always do, because, my friend, we are unintimidated and uncompromised, and we will bring you the truth no matter what it is, no matter who's saying it. We are all for the people of the United States of America, and we are going to continue to give you the truth, and you will know that, and it will set you free, as they say. Thank you very much, folks. We look forward to seeing you on the very next episode of the Daniel Davis Deep Dive.